All right, folks, we've made it. We've made it to day 7 of the creation story, and you may already know this, but that's the last day of the creation story. It's the last day. And we've talked about, if we go to the next slide, we've talked about this diagram, how days 1 and 2 and 3 align with 4 and 5 and 6, how 1, 2, and 3 are the spaces created to be filled, and 4, 5, and 6 are what's filling the spaces. So that's how this whole story ends up being structured. That's how they fit together. If we fold that, I like to, hot dog style. If we fold it hot dog style, that's how we see it coming together. Okay. But today we're going to fold this hamburger style. We're going to fold a hamburger style. Day 7 falls outside of those 6 symmetrical days of creation. And instead, it aligns with all that was before the day of creation. If we fold that down, hamburger style, we might call that top one day 0, okay? All that came before. If we fold that down, they mirror each other. But instead of a mirror that shows an exact reflection, it's showing a journey from what once was to what is now, okay? We began with chaos and emptiness and a God who was hovering over and presumably never resting, and we end up with a creation that is ordered and purposed and filled with beauty and imagination, and finally, and we end with a God who rests. A God who rests. So before we go any further, let's read the passage. This is Genesis 2. They kind of trick us. Put us all the way in Genesis 2 for this last day, verses 1 through 3. Thus the heavens and the earth were finished in all their multitude. By the 7th day, God finished the work that he had done, and he rested on the 7th day from all the work that he had done. So God blessed the 7th day and hallowed it, because on it God rested from all the work that he had done in creation. This is the word of the Lord. So I brought some books. And this is like 1/1000th of the number of books that have been written on the Sabbath. Just to let you know that I'm going to say some things about the Sabbath this morning, but it's just some things. There's so much more to learn. And the ones I did bring are the ones that are maybe a little more, they're less, slightly less like academic level where, lots of footnotes and things. These are a little more accessible to those of us who just want to read it and learn about the Sabbath. So if you do want to take a peek at these, I'd welcome you to do that. As a little plug, this is a friend of Eric and I, a seminary professor and a longtime friend, Eric, and Eric knew Travis when he was in middle school. So this is a book he recently wrote, and it's really wonderful. So, okay, I'm going to say some things about the Sabbath. Okay, so back to how this is structured, okay? There's another thing we need to highlight about the construction of this entire story that I hope will help us appreciate this 7th day that we're talking about in a new way. Can we pull up the next slide? Okay. All right. You ready? Okay. Construction of this whole story mirrors the construction of the temple. So let's take a look at what I mean by that. So over here we're seeing this is our creation story. So we have day 1, 2, and 3 coinciding with day 4, 5, and 6, okay? This is the temple. There's a portico, a nave, and a holy of holies, okay? Hold on to that a second. Now I'll just explain that right now. Okay, so if we remember up here, what was day 1 and day 4? That was the heavens, right? Okay, so the out there. What does anyone know what a portico is? It's the out there. It's like the porch, okay? It's like the porch of creation. Day 2 and 5, what was that? That was filling up the sky and the seas, okay? So we're inside creation. We've stepped into the nave, okay? We've stepped into the nave. And in the nave also is where we're going to find the rest of creation, where all the people are gathered. And what happens in the nave in the temple? That's where all the people are gathered, which where all the and for our conversation, all the creatures are gathered. In the temple, the people come into the nave, okay, to worship. And then day 7 is all on its own down here. This is the Sabbath. This is the Holy of Holies, where God lives. In the temples that were built, in the Temple of Solomon, for example, the Holy of Holies is where God, where you would go to find God. It was a dangerous, scary, wonderful place to be, and very few had the honor of entering the Holy of Holies. That was for priests only, right? That's where God lived. Day 7 coincides with that. That's interesting, isn't it? It's interesting to me. Okay. So in the book of 1 Kings, Solomon constructs this temple in 1 Kings, and it takes 7 years to complete. Interesting. The temple of creation took 7 days. And an important part of Israel's history includes their exile from Jerusalem. I'm not sure if you are remembering that's part of their story. They're exiled from Jerusalem, and they're forced to leave to Babylon, and their temple, this temple, is destroyed. It's obliterated. And we don't know when the story of creation exactly, the story that we just spent several weeks working through, we don't know exactly when that story was collected and written down. But one theory suggests that it was right after that temple was destroyed, right after they were exiled from their homes and their temple destroyed. The theory is that that creation story was told. The temple was believed to be where God dwelled, so they not only lost their identities, they also lost their access to God. Imagine that feeling, that they lost, like, we've lost not only who we are, but we've lost our God. So Psalm 137 is one of those psalms that they sang while they were in exile, and it captures the despair really well. This is 137, verses 1 through 4. By the rivers of Babylon, there we sat, and there we wept when we remembered Zion. On the willows there we hung up our harps. They put away their music, in other words. For there our captors asked us for songs, and our tormentors asked us for mirth, saying, sing us one of your songs of Zion. How could we sing the Lord's song in a foreign land? This story, so this theory that the creation story was beginning to be told around this time, the story was told possibly to suggest to this heartbroken people that this God was not a God who was trapped in a temple, okay? This is not a God who could be destroyed, that somehow died with the temple. Because their God is a God whose temple is indestructible. It doesn't actually even live in a place. God's temple is not only all creation, it's a place in time. It is Sabbath. The Holy of Holies, the most sacred place, isn't really a place at all, something that could be destroyed. It is in time. And that is something that no army could reach and no person could possibly lose. So imagine learning that in your despair and how that might lift you and remind you of what's true and real when you think that everything that was true and real has been destroyed. That's a message that came through for them at that time. Did you notice what God did on that seventh day as we read it, other than rest? God did something else. God, on that seventh day, blessed it, hallowed it. God, through this whole story, blessed creation as God was creating it, right? But the seventh day is the only day that God blesses the day. The day itself is blessed. God's blessing filled that time. Not just a creature, not a piece of land, not something that you could touch or see. God blessed that time, which is something wholly new and different than what God had been doing up until this point. Okay. This Holy of Holies in time, okay, remember the Holy of Holies in the temple? This Holy of Holies in time is what became known as the Sabbath. Rabbi Abraham Joshua Heschel said that honoring the Sabbath is part of our imitation of God, but it also becomes a way to find God's presence, like when you enter the Holy of Holies in a temple, okay? A way to find God's presence. It's not a space in time that we... It is not in space, but in time that we find God's likeness. I know that's... It's outside of our paradigm of how we think about God's presence. But not in God, and not in space, but in time that we find God's presence. Now the traditional, or God's likeness, I should say, the traditional Jewish Sabbath begins Friday evening at sundown and ends on Saturday just after sundown. So there is, of course, a whole other sermon about why we, as Christians, call Sunday the last/first day of the week, and why we call that the Lord's Day, and why that is something that we carry forward as the Sabbath. So just go look that up later. I could not bring that in this time. But so for the traditional Jewish Sabbath, though, so Friday evening at sundown, and it ends on Saturday evening just after sundown, traditionally, actually, when the first three stars appear in the sky. The seventh day in the Jewish calendar is Saturday, not Sunday. But no matter where we mark the seventh day, it functions as both the end and the beginning of the week, right? So picture like a bracelet with a clasp on it, or maybe like a watch, okay? Think about the clasp that joins one end to the other. That becomes both the beginning and the end of the bracelet, okay? That's what the Sabbath does. That's what the Sabbath day is. It is both the beginning and the end of the week. It's both the beginning and end of the loop, the rhythm. Eugene Peterson, the pastor and theologian, who had once pointed out that the day begins with sleep, right? Every day begins with sleep. Nobody's awake at midnight. Well, okay, that's not true. Generally speaking, the day begins with sleep, and the week begins with Sabbath. The day begins with sleep, and the week begins with Sabbath. And this, he said, is God's way of teaching us justification or salvation through grace and not works. Rest is not something that we earn. It is the beginning of all of our work. Rest is the beginning of everything that we do. It doesn't come after, it doesn't come because, it is priority, it is it. The Sabbath is resting in God and God's work. That's why. When we rest, when we receive a Sabbath, we are resting in the work of God. And from the work of God flows what we do, not the other way around. Okay, so what Eugene Peterson is saying is that the fact that we begin every day with sleep and we begin every week with Sabbath reminds us whose work is at work. Whose work is at work, and that is God's work. That reality is not only the beginning of our weeks, it is the starting point for our entire life of faith, right? So in Philippians 2, part of verse 12 and verse 13 says, work out your own salvation with fear and trembling, for it is God who is at work in you, enabling you both to will and to work for God's good pleasure. Our salvation, our good work in this world, it flows from God's work in us, and Sabbath is a constant reminder of that reality. Before we work, we rest in the work of God. And worth noting, too, that even before sin entered the world, there was Sabbath. Sabbath is not a response to sin or exhaustion. It's a response, or it's not a response to problems. It is in itself part of the fabric of creation. It's not medicine for a fix. It just is who we are and who we've been created to be as a whole of creation from the very beginning. I learned a fun fact this week. The Seventh-day Adventists is a sect of Christianity who practice Sabbath very seriously as like a core part of their practice of faith. And there was a large study done several years ago, and it found that Seventh-day Adventists live on average 11 years longer than the typical person, than the general population. And more than that, what's fascinating is that 11 years is also the number you'd get if you added up every Sabbath day over the course of a lifespan. Spending 11 years of a life practicing Sabbath seems to possibly add 11 years to your life. Okay, we all know correlation doesn't equal causation, but those are some really interesting numbers to me. Now, I'm not saying that we need to become Seventh-day Adventists, and I'm not saying we want to do this just to extend our lives, but this is just to say that there is a rhythm built into the fabric of creation, something that's underneath all of that, and we live at odds with it. There is a rhythm and something that it's inviting us constantly to, and we are over here two-stepping to a completely different beat, and God's saying, come join me again. Come back. And we're like, no, we're too busy. We're too busy, God. We'll leave our 11 years behind. Okay. If you look at the ancient practices of Sabbath, practices that still exist today, some of the core principles of those practices are ceasing, resting, feasting, delighting. Aren't those wonderful words? Ceasing, resting, feasting, delighting. Those are all things that we collectively have a very hard time accessing. That does not feel like a normal, natural thing to just have feasting and delight and rest in our lives, does it? It doesn't. But can't we feel those things calling us? I don't know a single person that doesn't say, I wish I wasn't so busy. I'm so tired. I'm weary. I can't keep up. I can't catch up. Things just keep rolling. I've described things this multiple times to people, that life has felt like, you know, when people tie like tin cans on the back of a just married car, I'm the tin can and life is the car. Like, why is that the feeling? Why is that the feeling? I know I'm not alone in feeling like that. So we can feel those things calling to us. And at this point, I think it's more than calling to us. I think we can feel those things reaching into us and urgently knocking on the door of our hearts. Right? Ceasing, resting, feasting, delighting are urgently calling my name and your name and our name. Not even just as a church, but as a society. They're feeling more urgent. They're trying to disrupt our frantic and busy and distracted lives. And I can feel that, and I think we all can. Because we are created for Sabbath. And our hearts long for it, whether we realize it or not. In some ways, I think we're a bit like the exiles in Babylon. Let's acknowledge that we have not been forcibly removed from our homes and everything that we know and love been destroyed. That's not what I mean. But instead of that, our culture of distraction, our fast-paced lives, consumerism, individualism, every ism that could possibly come after that, those things have stolen us from that home that we find in God and God's rhythm of life. We have been removed from something by these things. But just like those exiles in Babylon, God is reaching in and reminding us that no one and no thing and no culture and no people and no army can destroy God or what God has set into motion, because God dwells in time. The story of the 7 days of creation was and still is God saying, remember. No matter how desperate this feels, remember the truth. Remember that they cannot destroy me, and they cannot destroy where you can find me. Sabbath is about connecting with who God is. It's about connecting with who we are. It's about connecting with what's true in this world. In this world filled with illusions and things constantly competing for our hearts and our attention, it's constant. But we must remember the Sabbath. This isn't a judgment, and it's certainly not a claim that it's easy. There wouldn't be so many books on the topic if this was just something easy for us to pick up. Most of us feel like we've lost our agency in this world when it comes to time and how we spend it, lost any sense of control over how we spend our time. In some ways, that is absolutely true. Many of us don't have the privilege of choosing, you know, our work schedule or sports schedule, or can change the fact that we're somebody's 24/7 caregiver, or change the fact that we need to work 2 to 3 jobs to get by. Those things are true for many people, for many of us. A full 24-hour period full of nothing but rest and delight sounds impossible, like a privilege nobody could afford. And I can feel what we all feel about it. I can't possibly add one more thing to my life, let alone a 24-hour period of something. So let's acknowledge, though, that a 24-hour Sabbath is maybe an ideal. That's there for a reason. There's a reason there's a full day commandment in Scripture twice. There's a reason why a 24-hour Sabbath is the ancient practice that has been passed down from generation to generation and still practiced by many today. There's a reason. It's probably the ideal. But the invitation today is not to add a single thing to your life. Okay? I'm not asking you to add anything to your schedule. The invitation is to consider the ways that we each live at odds with the Sabbath and the spirit of the Sabbath. Not just in a weekly sense, not just in every week sense, but also in our daily lives. What is filling up the space and time in our lives that belongs rightfully to rest and delight? The question isn't what can be added. Thankfully, the question is what could be removed? That's a relief to me. That feels like a yoke coming off of my shoulders. What could be removed? And I can hear it right now. Nothing, everything's on fire and everything's urgent. Nothing can be changed. Everything's the way it has to be. I know it feels like that because that's how whoever they are, there isn't a person. But the wave of our culture tells us that it is impossible, that everything is on fire and everything's urgent and there's no time to even breathe, right? So are you sure that nothing could be removed? Are you sure? Pay attention to what you do between all of your to-dos. What if instead of immediately picking up your phones when we have a split second of downtime, we close our eyes and take a deep breath? Rest, even for a breath, is available to us. It's available. And what if after we finish something and before jumping into something else, we close our eyes and picture a single thing that makes us smile, and we thank God for it. Delight is what that is available to us. One of my my friends send we send pictures to each other of our garden spoils, and you know what? Honestly, at this time of the year, it's all pictures of tomatoes sliced on toast, just over and over, back and forth. And yesterday, she sent me a picture. She has some heirloom variety that's shaped like a flower when it's sliced on a piece of toast, and it was just so delightful. And I am so glad that she took that moment of delight and shared it with me so that I could have a moment of delight. These things are available to us. So listen for the way that Sabbath is knocking at the door of your heart this week. Listen for the rhythm that's woven into the fabric of creation. This is who we are. This is what we're made for. You know, we love to think of humans as the apex of creation, like the whole point was to get humans on this earth. Yeah, we're special. But we end here with Sabbath for a reason. That is special. Even if you're not ready to dance with God's rhythm yet, I dare you to at least tap your toe a little bit this week. Okay. Wendell Berry is a writer and a farmer, a poet, an essayist. He's a lot of things. He wrote a book collected some of his poems into a book called Sabbath Poems. As you can imagine, they were written on the Sabbath. And I want to share three of them with you. And between each, we're just going to have a moment of rest. Poem one. There is a day when the road neither comes nor goes, and the way is not a way, but a place. Poem two. Best of any song is a bird song in the quiet, but first you must have the quiet. The seed is in the ground. Now we may rest in hope while darkness does its work. Let's pray.